Late last week, the New York Times reported that worldwide, half the global population was under some sort of stay-at-home order. Roughly 4 billion people on Earth, half of all humanity. That represented a high watermark in the current coronavirus crisis, which has flooded our news feed with somber headlines for months now. Recently, the Washington Post reported that data suggests the coronavirus is both less contagious than the measles and less dangerous than Ebola. But we know the news is bad when that report provides us with a measure of reassurance. More than 1 million cases have been confirmed around the world now, with the apex of infections. When the apex of infections might hit depends upon where we live. It may be a couple of weeks away or months. The story, as journalists say, is a fast-breaking one, yet its impact will be long-lasting. Pandemics are nothing new in history, and certainly they are not new to sacred scripture. It's just that they reside outside the scope of our living memory. A century ago, the 1918 influenza outbreak caused approximately 50 million deaths. The drastic public health measures people everywhere are taking now are meant to spare the world such a massive toll again. This weekend, the CDC issued guidance for Americans to start wearing cloth masks in public to prevent both our spreading the virus and our contracting it. The aim is to keep as many people as possible from becoming infected and possibly ill, and in very rare cases, terminally ill. What we today call a pandemic was known in the ancient world as a plague, and the primitive records we have of those from past centuries are somber. They recount the tragic plague of Justinian, the Black Death, the smallpox. All of those taught us hard lessons about hygiene, quarantine, and medicine. Humanity somehow survived them all. This week, we observe the start of the Jewish festival of Passover, which is an epic tale of survival from millennia ago. Pesach, as it is known in Hebrew, is the oldest continuously observed Jewish holiday. Even those who are not intimately familiar with Jewish customs are familiar with the first night of the 8-day feast, usually celebrated around the table with family and friends who hold a ritual meal called a Seder. The flavors on the Seder plate are a symbolic arrangement of bitter and sweet. If you have shared seders with others, you know the meal is narrated using a script called the Haggadah. This accounts events recorded in the book of Exodus in the Hebrew scriptures. The Israelites who are held captive in Israel are eventually released from bondage by Pharaoh himself, but only after his land is beset by 10 different plagues. In the midst of each one, Moses, the leader of the Israelites, tells Pharaoh, "Let my people go." Each time, Pharaoh promises to do just that, but as soon as Egypt gets a little relief, he reneges on that promise. In advance of the 10th and final plague, Moses issues the Israelites a stay-at-home order. They were to shelter in place and mark their doorways with lamb's blood, so the plague would pass over their households and spare their children. The Passover story cannot seem more timely than it does today. Everyone in the state of Massachusetts who is not engaged in essential services and has the personal option of staying home is fervently hoping their household will be spared the coronavirus. Yet even those who might be spared have a painful awareness that not everyone will. Hospital beds are filling as I speak. Plagues and pandemics announce their presence by their scale, by the tremendous human costs they incur. When I think of the thousands of deaths in my home state of New York, I want to weep. While I hope this state is spared the hardship New York, and in particular New York City, has known, I know that New Yorkers are helping us to understand both what to do and what not to do in a time of crisis. For most of the past 20 years I lived in New York City, I was downtown on 9/11. I graduated seminary a couple of years later and got married in my seminary chapel uptown. My husband, Ben, and I bought our first home in Riverdale. Each spring we resided there, we would get into our car and drive across the George Washington Bridge to visit his cousins in New Jersey and join them in their Passover meal. The Seder would usually start late because traffic was usually terrible. We would invariably complain about it, and our Jersey cousins would invariably commiserate, and we would make excuses for how little of the Haggadah we would get through together because everyone was hungry and we wanted to eat before it got too late. We would joke about not having time for the bread to rise. It all seems remarkably quaint now. Then we would sing a couple of rushed but rousing verses of Dayenu, a classic Hebrew song of Thanksgiving. Dayenu is usually translated to mean it would have been enough. Dai Dayenu, Dai Dayenu, Dai Dayenu, 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 we would sing. If God had taken us out of Egypt and not judged the Egyptians, Dayenu, it would have been enough. If God had judged the Egyptians but not their idols, Dayenu, it would have been enough. If we were feeling silly, we would add a couple of contemporary lyrics tailored to our local circumstances, like, if God had just taken us over the JWB and to I-95 and not the Garden State Parkway, that would have been enough, Dayenu. Wednesday will be the first night of Passover, and for the first time in a long while, Ben and I will not be headed out to the houses of family or friends. Like billions of others of people, we will be staying in our house. But we will be celebrating, albeit remotely. Like us, Jews around the world will be having a new kind of Seder this year, a virtual one, hosted on Skype or FaceTime or Zoom or Facebook or Google Hangouts. Choose your platform. But with the hopes that the coronavirus will not ever pass over their households, but everyone else's as well. Jews know this time-honored tale of affliction, limitation, and seclusion. And they understand that mobilization is not far behind and eventual liberation follows, but at their own pace, not at ours. After their departure from plague-ridden Egypt, the Israelites spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness, circling the desert before arriving in their promised land. In a wise advice piece she published in the Chronicle of Higher Education, Professor Aisha Ahmad contended, global catastrophes change the world. Even if we contain the coronavirus crisis within a few months, the legacy of this pandemic will live with us for years, perhaps decades to come. It will change the way we move, build, learn, and connect, she declared. There is simply no way that our lives will resume as if this had never happened. The emotionally and spiritually sane response is to prepare to be forever changed. But how can we ever truly prepare ourselves for such a massive shift? Pack nothing. Don't wait for the bread to rise. Take nourishment for the journey, but eat standing. Do not hesitate to leave your old ways behind, poet Alla Rene Dozart tells us. Only surrender to the needs of the time. Begin quickly. Sit out in the dark. Sing songs. You may at times grow confused and lose your way. Make maps as you go. Pass on the whole story. Do not go back. Give up that fantasy that so many of us harbor, understandably, maybe even in secret, that sometime soon things will return to normal. Surrender to the needs of this time, our present. There is a new normal now, and it is the one to which we must become accustomed. As this current public health crisis was escalating, I must confess I thought a key part of our ministry at UU Wellesley Hills would be preserving some sense of normalcy here. But I see that that is not possible any longer. More importantly, I see that it may not be desirable. These days, I am reluctant to get attached even to the new normal because I suspect there may be a not yet normal still making its way to us more or less rapidly. For many of the years that I lived in New York, I maintained a psychotherapy therapy practice, and there's an old clinical adage that I remember well from that time: never let a good crisis go to waste. Any crisis contains valuable opportunities for us to make positive changes among the setbacks, hardships, and yes, disasters of our lifetimes. In this faith community, we have committed ourselves to seeking spiritual growth. A period of crisis represents a time when that process can be accelerated if we attend to it in the proper spirit and expand our awareness of what we hold most sacred. Because in all likelihood, what we hold most sacred is what is holding us up in the midst of this. Not too long ago, I shared with you all an online poem written by a colleague of mine in ministry, the Reverend Lynn Unger. Titled Pandemic, it reads thus: what if you thought of it as the Jews consider the Sabbath the most sacred of times? Cease from travel, cease from buying and selling, give up just for now on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing, pray, touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down. And when your body has become still, reach out with your heart, knowing we are connected in ways that are terrifying and beautiful. You can hardly deny it now. Know that our lives are in one another's hands. Surely that has become clear. Do not reach out your hands, reach out your heart, reach out your words. Reach out all the tendrils of compassion that move invisibly where we cannot touch. Promise this world your love, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, so long as we all shall live. Remember those promises you have made. Those promises will matter in the days, weeks, and months to come. Even after the spread of the coronavirus slows, note that we ourselves can always go a bit slower too. The global economy presently hangs in the balance, that is true, but the pace at which it was moving previously was unsustainable. The pace at which most of us were moving was. We better recognize that now. A good quarter, or a good year, or a good decade, none of that will count for much if we have exhausted all our earthly resources, both human and natural. In her advice piece, Professor Ahmed urged us to ignore all that coronavirus-inspired productivity pressure and instead encourage us to prioritize our physical and psychological security as well as our emotional and spiritual sanity. She directed us to establish strong support systems that could last through this crisis. Let this congregation be part of your support system, please. Don't worry about how it might look, sound, or feel if you ask for help. We will all need some, sooner or later. Now more than ever, we must abandon the performative and embrace the authentic. Our essential mental shifts require humility and patience. Focus on real internal change. These human transformations will be honest, raw, ugly, hopeful, frustrated, beautiful, and divine, Professor Ahmed insisted. Be slow. Let this distract you. Let it change how you feel and how you see the world, because the world is our work. Have faith in the process. Calamity is a great teacher. We are each learning its lessons for ourselves. Essentially, what we are presented with now is a story problem set in our modern day existence. We have cutting edge science at our disposal, along with ancient wisdom, and we would be smart to incorporate both into our thinking. Passover speaks powerfully to our extreme circumstances today. We should listen to its admonition to leave behind anything that will not support more abundant life. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, sovereign of the universe, who has given us life and sustained us and brought us to this season, a well-known Jewish prayer proclaims. Each season brings its own sustenance. The Israelites departing Egypt did not have time for their bread to rise, but in the desert they did not even eat the bread they baked. They did not even eat the bread they baked. They ate manna. We do not know what the coming weeks or months will hold, but I don't want us to preclude the possibility that they could contain surprising gifts. Understand that this is a marathon, Professor Ahmed wrote. The coronavirus may even be an ultra-marathon, who knows? But we need to be prepared to pace ourselves, to start steadily, to speed up, and also to slow down, to stop suddenly if we need to stop. Right now, we need to stop. This does not mean that we will not go the distance in time. We need to appreciate stopping as an important phase of this collective endurance contest. Eventually, the billions and billions living under a stay-at-home order will be let go from their houses. Then we will witness a mass exodus back into the public sphere and marketplace. And quite possibly, like the Israelites before us, we will feel lost a while and maybe even miss our prior confines. My hope is that we will still remember how to sing our spirit songs with rousing choruses of Dayenu, enumerating all the bittersweet blessings of survival. My hope is that we can seek divine direction whenever we are disoriented. This year, in the midst of the worst pandemic in living memory, I encourage you to recall the whole story of Passover. Its heartbreak and vulnerability and impatience and defiance and frustration and triumph and revelation and everything else in that mix. People will become ill with the coronavirus, some will die of it, but many more will survive. That is the reality we face now, our so-called new normal. In our call to worship this morning, the Haggadah encourages us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve the Spirit. Heal, help, bless, serve. If nothing else, these worldwide shelter-in-place orders may give us the chance to regain some sense of perspective and reorder our priorities. They may force us to become more at home in our humanity and with our human limitations. May the life lessons we are learning now be food for our souls and sustenance for the whole community. May they give us shared strength for the long journey that has only very newly begun.